come with curiosity and an open mind and try to get as much out of the place as you can in this short amount of time that you usually have.
In this interview of the Creating New Spaces podcast, I'm talking with Shreja Shubert, a Berlin-based artist. Her work often questions the nature-culture divide in our digital world. Her work often includes installations and performances. This interview focuses on trilogy, which is the outcome from a Stars for Water residency. In the conversation, we talk about what is the trilogy, climate change, her residency experiences, and the collaborative processes and working with generative AI. Therese, welcome to the Creating New Spaces podcast.
Thanks for inviting me.
What is the Glacier Trilogy?
The Glacier Trilogy is a three-piece work that investigates glaciers and their transformation in the actual times of climate crisis. And it also in particularly looks at the origin of fluvial systems and how they start to form in mountain regions. I was doing a residency in northern Italy in the Alpine region, or at the beginning of the Alpine regions. And I was specifically looking at the topic of fluvial systems as indicators of climate change and its impacts. So that's how I started to work on this piece.
So it's three different pieces. How do they all sort of work together or separately?
The best is if you imagine some kind of a darkened space, and the three works together should give an immersive and multifaceted experience of various aspects of glaciers. So each of the works uses different media and materials and technologies, but together they do form some kind of a unity. So at first, I would say, if you imagine you would enter this exhibition space, you hear a prominent sound composition that's like a bit of a opera. It's a voice, a singing voice, and sometimes it's like multiplied to a choir, and it's also has synthetic sounds and field recordings that are arranged to a composition, and the sound is part of the first part, the AI video. It's a projection of nearly all black and white or sepia videos of synthetic glacier formation. For this video, I trained a neural network with archival images of glaciers in this region. So the result is based on fake glaciers that could be a machine imagination of these features of mountains and ice formations in the landscape over time, based on the historical photographs that I found in an archive. And also, when you enter the space, there is a sculptural part made of glass vessels. They are hanging from the ceiling, and in these glass vessels is ice core meltwater. So essentially, when scientists go into the mountains or into the Arctics, they do these deep core drillings of the ice. They go meters and meters deep, so they can do biochemical analysis of the climate of the past centuries. And I visited one of the laboratories in Milano that is doing these analysis of the ice cores, and received some samples of the drillings, which I then encapsulated and preserved, let's say, for a future in these glass sculptures that I made. So this is a very traditional material work that is a part of the piece, and people can stand, they are hanging an eye level or a little bit higher, so people can walk in between them and stand also under them and look through the glass and in yeah, through the water to get an experience of this part of the piece. And the third part of the Glacier Trilogy is a video sculpture, a large video sculpture that can stand in the space. It's made of two panoramic screens on top of each other, and it's running a simulation of glacial fluid systems in the mountain. So it's like a particle simulation that's running over a 3D map of a territory in the Alpine regions. And it's a bit abstract, so it's not like a very realistic rendering. It's rather a more fluidic rendering of points and, let's say, their echo over time. And as part of this piece, there are also sensors installed in the exhibition space, CO2 sensors, so that the breath of the people, the more people in the space are, the more CO2 will be in the space. And this is also having an effect on the simulation by changing some of the aesthetic features that happen in the simulation in real time. So all of these three pieces together, they should, my idea was that they create somehow a mode of contemplation and reflection on various aspects of glaciers, but also the fragility of our environment at large and the transformations that are currently happening as a result of climate change.
So a few things we'll talk about around what you've just said. A lot of your past work and your current work is about a connection to nature and being humans being part of nature. This is very explicitly about climate change, rather than some of the other pieces, which is sort of less explicitly about climate change. Why did you make that choice?
Well, first of all, it's a very pressing issue that we have at the moment, and the one that will be very decisive for our future and the next generations on this planet too. So I think it's a very important topic and urgent topic, and that in more general, I think art can also play a role in bringing this topic to a larger audience, also a non-scientific community, and specifically by choosing like the medium of art, which is more about experience maybe and reflection. It's giving a different access to these topics than reading, let's say, a newspaper article or a science paper about these issues. The second reason for this is maybe a little bit more pragmatic. I mean, I wanted to work on this topic, but also it was specifically the topic of this residency program that I applied for. So, I mean, I knew that it was supposed to address climate change, but that's also why I chose it.
Mm-hmm. So it was partly the context of the residency that helped then shape a different more explicit addressing of that in your work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other thing in your work is you seem to oscillate between using media and nature and bio art in some ways. And this piece, only really the middle glass sculptural piece, uses material. Why did you make that choice? I'm just interested.
Well, I think, well, I did want to have a part of this work that actually had the real material, meaning water, in the piece, because the rest is all like new media that is rather ephemeral, or let's say the material is the technology that is used as such. And I did want to have this more direct engagement by using this ice core water in it, also because it's, I think, a great entry point. Also, the water is transparent and you can't really see anything much in it. You can use your imagination that this water is like 10,000 years old. So you're looking at something very ancient, and there might be indeed, or there are dust particles, for example, from the air in it. There might even be some organic remnants of small organisms from the past in there, preserved now in this glass sculptures. So yeah, I wanted to emphasize this aspect of imagination in the work too.
As I was thinking about your work and doing a deeper dive into it, that it's interesting you're using that word evocative, because I was, or imagination, because I was feeling like quite often there was a really sensual, evocative experiences that you were creating. And it, what actually attracted me to this particular piece was the documentation of that actual part of the show, because it just looked very mysterious. It looked really engaging. It looked quite magical. It does sound like it's sort of the experience of questioning the age and experience of the water is a powerful experience as well.
Yeah, it's a little bit also like a memorial, let's say, to the glaciers or to this era that's gone now, because, you know, we all know here most of the glaciers that we have in the Alpine regions, they will not survive in the next 100 years. So also it's a bit of a, it's sad, but also that it doesn't really help, but I wanted to give it some kind of a presence.
So the three pieces emerged as an outcome for the residency. Did you actually have specific ideas about the outcomes at the start?
No. I didn't apply with a specific work idea. It was more like a conceptual approach in my application. And I guess the first... I had so many inputs during the residencies, because my residency hosts at Fondazione Pistoletto, they did a really great job in connecting me to different experts and also bringing me to university researchers in Turin, and to glaciologists, to rice farmers, to a meteorological observatory, to all kinds of different stations and experts in the area that dealt with water in various ways. And this gave me a lot of different inspirations. So there was lots of different things I wanted to do, and I couldn't really decide on these. That's why I ended up choosing three different approaches and technologies to do. But the first, I guess, initial reason why I chose to work on glaciers in specifically, because also that wasn't clear at the beginning of the residency, was that I visited an archive at the university in Turin. It's called the Glaciological Committee, and they collect since the mid-19th century photographs and measurement tools, artifacts and books about glaciers in the Italian Alpine region. And they have massive amounts of photographs, also maps, old maps, big maps from the area. And also I found there some diaries of Italian glaciologist Ardito Desio. He went into the mountains between the 1920s and 40s, and there were little, like, well, I mean, notebooks on paper with pencil and his handwriting and drawings inside, and of course everything in Italian, but I do speak Italian. But it was very hard to read, to decipher, let's say, this handwriting. And also there were little drawings of some of the mountain spots or the glaciers in there. And I found this, really special. And this kind of sparked me that I also wanted to work on others. And I worked then with another Italian literary expert, translation expert, to transcribe these diaries, because sometimes you couldn't recognize all of the words. So it was a process to actually get this down in writing, and then actually translating this from Italian into English, because then, of course, I wanted to understand it better, and also I wanted to use the text to generate some AI images. So I used the text as an input for some machine learning model, and it was recreating a landscape based on this description of Adito Desio from the 1930s. So here you also see that on a meta level, I was kind of interested also in looking at all these different ways of translation, and of course maybe also the errors or the glitches that happen in between once you start translating from first handwriting into some kind of computer text, then you go into a different language, and then you go to translate it in, or you have it transformed by a machine learning model again, and then you have some kind of output that you deal with as an artist again and translate it into an exhibition piece.
That's interesting. Actually, that leads into one of the things I want to explore a little bit, because this isn't the first time you've worked with generative AI. I'm getting a bit of feedback.
Yeah, no, I have worked with it before, specifically also with text models, actually.
And then you work a lot with generative algorithms. How do you find that process different? And I think it's interesting you get that word translation, because it strikes me the interesting word to use in this context.
I guess the difference between working with simulation of something, and in my case, normally simulation of some kind of nature phenomena or physical process, physical bioprocesses, opposed to working with machine learning model, visual or text-based outputs, is that in some sense, I mean, the data set that you use for the input to train your neural network is extremely important, because it defines, of course, what the system can output in the end. But then, so there's a limitation that you give to the system somehow by the data set. The larger, of course, the more variation you will have. But then you have this moment of surprise too, that you don't know exactly what the machine will output. So it's always exciting somehow to see what will come out at the end. Whereas with simulation, it's a little bit different. I would usually start to define actually what it should do or how it should look like already on the beginning. And then I would usually work also with a developer or a programmer to actually bring the piece to life, who would collaborate with me on, making it, like the algorithm happen.
So it's almost, as you're sort of talking, the simulation process, it's a lot more pre-planning, and the AI process has a lot more actual chance to it. You actually talked in a very positive tone about the unexpected natures that you might sometimes get with it.
I guess that's the fascination by most of people use these AI models, is that you have this surprise and fascination then by whatever the machine can generate and think in quotation marks of. So, and yeah, with the simulation, it's a bit more defined on the beginning, although pretty much all the simulations that I make in my artwork, they are kind of open. So they are generative too, and they do have like sometimes some kind of interface that opens it to the environment or to human interaction via sensors. So that they are not completely defined. They do have variation possibilities within themselves.
So you talked about one of the collaborations in one of the pieces, but there was multiple collaborations right through each one of the three pieces. How did that change the way the process worked for each one of the pieces?
I guess, yeah. For example, working on the glass sculptures was for me a totally new experience because I'm not really a traditional sculptor. So working with the glass sculptures was a totally new process for me because I have never done this before. And for them, I made some plaster sculptures from mountain terrains. So they were like 40 by 40 centimeters plaster models with some mountains. And this we used to blow the glass on top so that they had imprints of the landscape on the outside of it. And I worked with a glass blower from Turin in Italy. And I mean, he operated the whole process, of course, because it's impossible to just learn this on the spot. Glass blowing is very difficult and also very hard work, as I learned, like very physical work in the end. But in this case, I specifically liked the contrast because with glass, you work with fire, but then I made kind of sculptures that resembled glaciers. So this contrast of ice and fire, but then also glass in essence looks quite similar to transparent ice too. So, that's also, I guess, why I chose to actually make these kind of glass sculptures on the beginning. And this was a very, very physical work, going to a workshop, which I did enjoy a lot because it's different to my usual practice where I work on the computer most of the time. And for me, it was somewhat relaxing to do more work with my hands, actually. And with the other works, I guess they are more what my usual practice looks like. Like I visited the archive in Turin several times, quite a few times, to research there. So to have this larger research component where I would connect with scientists and experts, share knowledge, let's say, collect material and so on. That's very familiar in my practice. And then also to go for the simulation part and collaborate with a programmer on the realization of the piece is something that I have done for many of my works in the past. So this is more, let's say, a collaboration of talking, describing, sketching, and then coding, which is very different to blowing glass.
So exactly how was it different?
I guess the main difference is between more physical work and work with materials like plaster or glass, fire, heat, you sweat, and you know, also it's heavy. There is like tools like steel and you know, different tools, tweezers, steel pipes, and so on that you need in the process of making glass sculptures. A big oven and so on. Whereas working on the computer is much less physical, and usually, I mean, you don't start sweating because it's heavy work or something like that. It's rather your back is maybe in pain after a while, or your hand or something like that, because you don't sit straight or something. But it's a very different experience, a very different bodily experience also.
Okay. So was that part of the project of bit more like when you're working with the bio-art where you're growing orgasms?
Yeah, that's similar, yeah. Also, and I mean, working with living organisms is a totally different process. Again, first of all, of course, you are interacting with something that's alive, and it has a big aspect of care in it. So you need to look after these organisms. I mean, maybe not every hour or not every day, but maybe, you know, every once a day, let's say, or something, you check on your petri dishes or whatever it is that you are doing. And you might need to feed them or to clean, or there's different parts of care that you need to do to keep the organisms alive. And also, there is always a very strong aspect, I guess, maybe it's not failure, but there is a risk that these things might get contaminated or that they might die, or, you know. So it has a whole different aspect of death. Sounds very big, but, well, in some sense, yes, because, I mean, if your algorithm doesn't work, you just change something and start over, right? But if all your experiment with petri dishes failed, you have to, I mean, they are really gone. You have to start from scratch again, and it's different.
Yeah, because it's a thing. It's not malleable like digital code is. If it either works or doesn't work, it has different time frames and things as well.
It's all totally different timings, of course, because also in this case, you can't really influence too much the growth speed of an organism, for example. It just takes the time that it takes to grow, right? You can do something maybe to speed it up, but in essence, if it takes 2 weeks, then it takes 2 weeks to grow, and there's not so much that you can do about to change. And also, it has an aspect, of course, of ethics too, always, because by deciding to work with organisms, you always take into account that these things might actually die. So, you know, you have this aspect on the beginning that you, well, need to be aware of and find your own way how to deal with it too.
Sometimes residencies really shift and change artist practices. This particular residency, have you?
I don't think it really shifted my practice. I mean, maybe I produced I did produce something new. I worked with materials that I never worked before. I think the nice thing that came out from this residency was that I have established a lasting contact to the glaciological committee and the professor Marco from Torino there. And we did actually meet at the end of summer in autumn last year to go on a glacier field trip together. With some environmentalists and scientists. And yeah, so we kind of keep in touch and sometimes meet too, which is not always the case after residencies.
So sometimes residencies, by the temporal nature of them, they are only temporal relationships as well. So, yeah, you've got that longer-term relationship that might lead somewhere to something else, but it might be interesting. A couple of wrap-up questions. As creatives, we always like to talk about what we're doing next or what we're working on now. What are you currently working on?
Actually, I'm showing the Glacier Trilogy for the first time in Berlin in April in a gallery space here in Berlin. So I'm doing preparations and a few updates on the work for this. And then I'm developing a new piece for an exhibition at the end of the year for a museum in Leipzig, and that's talking about AI and ecology. So this is something where I'm very much at the beginning now.
My wrap-up question. What's your greatest piece of advice to other artists about doing residencies?
I guess come with curiosity and an open mind, and try to get as much out of the place as you can in this short amount of time that you usually have, to find what's special about the location, because otherwise you could do the work from anywhere else in the world. So to find something that really makes sense that you could only do there. I guess to network and meet people also from there, and maybe establish actually links that could last beyond the residency, to make it, let's say, more sustainable in terms of networking.
Thank you for a lovely wrap up to a great conversation.
Thank you for the invitation, and yeah, I hope you enjoyed it.
Recently, I've been thinking about collaborations as relationships, and that sometimes the most interesting collaborations that artists actually have is not always with other creatives. This residency is a great example of how artists form different types of relationships. Some of the relationships Teresa talks about includes the relationship with the glacier, the researchers, the glassblower, the coder she worked with, and the AI that she trained. Thank you so much for listening to the Creating New Spaces show. If you got value from this, chances are that other people in your community will. Please share the link to the show with your colleagues and friends, or mention the show on social media.